Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Do you love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Sam.
And I'm Sean.
And this is Key to the Case. Welcome back and thank you all for tuning in once again. I have quite a strange case for you today, and fair warning that there will be mention of suicide in this episode. We have to take next week off, but we will be back on the last Sunday of this month, so October 27th. All right, let's get into today's case. Robert Cope was 53 years old at the time of his death in 2015. Robert grew up in Texarkana, Texas, and much of his childhood was spent playing with his two sisters. Robert was active from a young age, constantly riding his skateboard or bike. He and his family often filled their summers with camping, water skiing, and fishing, which were all activities Robert thoroughly enjoyed. His oldest sister, Michelle, fondly recalls Robert's laid-back nature and adaptability. He was a pretty free-spirited and easygoing person. I got the impression that Robert had a natural knack for mechanics. As his sister mentioned, he was always skilled with engines. It's no surprise then that one of his first jobs was working as a mechanic at a Ford dealership. Robert went on to join the Air Force in 1980, where he was an airplane mechanic. He worked on high-tech aircraft systems for 5 years, and his military tours were in various locations, spanning all the way from Arkansas to Honduras to Germany and beyond. After Robert was honorably discharged from the Air Force, he relocated to Alexandria, Virginia, south of Washington, D.C., where he trained and ultimately began a career in HVAC system maintenance and electrical engineering. By 1995, Robert's company transferred him to a facility in San Francisco, and he quickly fell in love with this new life in the Bay Area. Robert's sister has said that he was at one with the place. He said he had never been anywhere he enjoyed more. Now, Robert was a dedicated worker, but like most of us, he made the most of his free time. He was a musician. He played the ukulele, guitar, bass, and drums. He enjoyed live music and collected vinyl records. But one of his favorite pastimes was taking motorcycle rides, a hobby that makes sense when we consider the adventurous side he'd exhibited since childhood. Robert made many friends through the community of motorcyclists, and they would often take rides throughout California together, but he would also take solo rides. As Robert's sister described it, his motorcycle rides were more than just a hobby. They were an outlet that gave him a sense of freedom and connection to nature. On his rides, he typically brought his camera and a fishing pole so he could capture photos of the different views he came upon, and he liked to stop to fish if he found a good spot. Robert was one to diversify his riding routes. In fact, it's reported pretty categorically that he never took the same route twice. This approach made sense as each new route offered a unique experience. This was his way of exploring. He also preferred to avoid major highways, opting instead for back roads when possible.
So did Robert map out his rides beforehand, or did he just kind of find his way as he went?
That's a good question. And I found myself asking the same question in this case because motorcycle riding plays directly into this story. I don't think he mapped out his route. He would know which direction he needed to go and he would go in that general direction, but he must have had a really good sense of direction as well because he seemed to know how to get around without mapping it out using his phone. And Robert loved riding so much that at one point he rode his motorcycle across the country from San Francisco to South Carolina to visit his parents. And I had to check, it's about 2,700 miles, depending on where they were in South Carolina. So that is quite a long ride. He did make stops. He stopped to visit friends he had in different cities along the way, but probably the longest ride he ever did. There's not much information about Robert's personal relationships out there, but according to Unsolved Mysteries, he was briefly married when he was young, although it's unclear exactly when that relationship ended. And by the time of his death at 53, he was not married. However, he had been in an on-again, off-again relationship for a couple of years with a woman who had recently moved in with him in San Jose, California. So despite the on-again, off-again nature of their relationship, it appeared they were in a more stable position at that point since they were moving in together.
But no kids.
Yeah, Robert never had kids, yeah. And I will tell you about another relationship he had from the past, a fiance he had, but I want to save that for a little bit later. In early October 2015, Robert visited a friend in Oroville, California, which is between 3 and 4 hours north of San Jose, where Robert lived. It's unclear how long he spent visiting this friend, but I really don't think that detail pertains to the story. So Robert texted his girlfriend at 6:27 a.m. on Tuesday, October 6th. This was at the end of his trip. And he let her know that he was packing up and going to stop at a coffee shop before heading in the direction of San Jose. She didn't hear from him again until 4 hours later when he sent her a picture of a blackberry bush. I guess they both liked blackberries, so it wasn't unusual that he shared that photo with her. Sometime between 11 and 11:30 a.m., his girlfriend spoke with him on the phone and he let her know that he had stopped in Grass Valley or near Grass Valley because he wanted to go fishing. And Grass Valley is about an hour drive away from Oroville. And looking at a map, it doesn't appear that it would be a town you would naturally pass through on your way home to San Jose. Like, it looks like you'd be taking a circuitous route if you're going through Grass Valley.
Which makes sense with how he likes to go on his motorcycle rides.
Exactly. Yeah. He liked to take scenic routes and back roads. I think it would be hard to determine what his way home would have been because it wouldn't have been the most direct route. When he spoke to his girlfriend, he indicated that he was not sure if he would stay there overnight. But then not too long after they got off the phone, he texted her and said that he would head home because he remembered that he had a job interview the following day. And that was the last time they spoke with each other. There was nothing about the conversation that stood out to Robert's girlfriend, and she certainly didn't feel concern for Robert. Robert's girlfriend texted him shortly before 8 p.m. and asked him when he would be home. I would be pretty worried in this situation because she last spoke with him around 11 a.m. and now it's 8 p.m. and Grass Valley, where he stopped, is about 3 hours from San Jose. And we know he wanted to fish, but I guess what I'm saying is in this situation, I would assume he would have been home by that point since he had that interview the next day, but his girlfriend reported later to investigators that she wasn't too concerned at that moment because it wasn't unlike Robert to change his plans on the fly when he was on the road.
But if he did that, would he have told her? Would he have contacted her and said, hey, I'm not going to be home till later than intended?
No, not necessarily. I don't think he would have told her if he were to still be home on the same day. Now, it sounded like if he were to stay overnight and actually not be home that night, then yeah, he probably would have told her that. The next detail we know is that Robert stopped to get gas in the small town of Sonora at 10 p.m. Of course, no one knew this at the time. He didn't text his girlfriend to tell her this, but this detail was uncovered through credit card statements during the investigation that ensued because of his death. So Sonora is about 3 hours southeast of Grass Valley, and this town would also not have been on the way home if you follow the most direct route to San Jose. But again, I can see how if you are taking back roads, then you might go this way. And it likely provided a better landscape than the more direct route. This stop at 10 p.m. suggests that he likely left Grass Valley sometime between 6 and 7 p.m., or he left Grass Valley earlier in the day and stopped somewhere to fish on the way to Sonora. Either way, we're looking at an 11-hour window from 11 a.m. approximately to 10 p.m. where Robert's exact movements are unaccounted for. Robert's lack of response to his girlfriend's text around 8 p.m. aligns with this timeline. He was likely on the road and not checking his phone and may not have thought to check it during his stop at the gas station. But when he spoke with his girlfriend earlier, she actually recommended he turn his phone off to save battery. She thought if there were an emergency, he wouldn't want to be stuck with a dead phone. Sonora is about a 2.5-hour drive from San Jose. But knowing Robert's tendencies, I think that could have taken longer. Although at the same time, it was dark at that point when he was getting gas in Sonora. So he wouldn't be stopping to fish or take photos anymore. Since he got gas at 10 p.m., he would likely arrive home around 12:30 a.m. at the earliest. When Robert's girlfriend awoke the next morning and saw that Robert hadn't made it home, her initial worry quickly escalated into a state of panic. She knew Robert intended to come home the night before. He had appointments that day, including an interview that he couldn't miss. She started making calls to hospitals to see if he was admitted anywhere. She reached out to family members, and she even contacted a campground in Grass Valley in case he had chosen to stay in Grass Valley after all. Her biggest concern was an accident. Not to state the obvious, but the likelihood of a fatality in a motor accident is much higher when you ride a motorcycle than if you drive a car. So being the partner of someone who regularly rides a motorcycle, it isn't unusual to have some anxiety in that regard, but I'm sure the fact that Robert was a skilled motorcycle rider and wore the appropriate protective gear gave her some comfort. She learned nothing from the phone calls she made, and her final call was to the police. But it wouldn't be long before she discovered the horrifying truth about what happened to Robert the night before. Around the same time that Robert's girlfriend was making the phone calls, a man walked into a market in LaGrange, California, and told an employee that he saw what he presumed was a dead man on the side of LaGrange Road. And LaGrange Road is also called J59, but for this episode, we will refer to it as LaGrange Road. He told the clerk that he didn't have a cell phone, so she would need to call 911, and he left.
This is 2015, right?
Yes.
I wonder what percentage of people don't have a cell phone in 2015. That seems a little shocking.
Yeah, I don't know, but it has to be a pretty small percentage, I would say. The clerk called her mother, who was driving in the area with a friend, to see if she could find this man, the man who was presumed dead, before she called 911.
Sure, you might get there, but was she asked why she called her mom first? Not the police. She just found out there's a presumed dead body on the side of a road.
I wonder if she was skeptical. I was thinking perhaps she wanted to confirm that the man was actually there.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Depending on the guy who gave her this information, maybe there was something kind of off about him. So yeah, it's a little odd. I think I would call 911 immediately, but I don't know if she already, it was her mom and her mom's friend riding together. If they were already in that area, then I guess maybe to her it made sense.
Yeah, probably wouldn't take too long to go confirm this.
Yeah, before potentially wasting law enforcement's time if there's no one actually there. The clerk's mother found Robert on the side of the road, like the man described, in tall weeds. One of the women told the Modesto Bee in 2015, quote, "It was pretty scary coming upon that, especially so close to home. When I first saw him, I was yelling out the window, 'Hey, are you okay?' I started to freak out when he didn't respond," end quote. After processing what was before their eyes, they called 911, and the Stanislaus County Sheriff's Office headed to the scene shortly after the call at 10:53 a.m. Before we dive into the details of the crime scene, which are quite bizarre, I want to take a moment to describe LaGrange. So LaGrange is not too far from Sonora, where Robert stopped to get gas. It's about a half hour drive away. And for the first time in this story, the location made sense to me. I mean, looking at a map, I can see how LaGrange would be on the way home to San Jose from Sonora, and he would have been headed south on LaGrange Road. The road where he was found is a rural, desolate stretch with very little activity. There's a long section with no visible businesses or homes nearby. Robert was found a quarter mile north of his motorcycle, which was in a ditch, making it difficult to see from the road. He was dressed in motorcycle riding leathers and lying 8 to 10 feet away from the road in what's described as the fetal position up against a fence. Not far from his body was his motorcycle bag lying on the ground, and there were other items such as a pair of pants, a camera, a phone charger, presumably items from his bag, and then those items were scattered on the shoulder of the road. Robert's driver's license was lying next to his head atop a red coin purse. His cell phone was discovered on the opposite side of the road, about a quarter mile away from his body, and the phone was shut off. So now we have his motorcycle and phone that are about a quarter mile away from his body, but not together. And his phone being shut off wasn't too suspicious because, as I said earlier, his girlfriend suggested he turn it off. Initially, Robert's helmet couldn't be located, but a woman would later come forward to say that she picked it up off the side of the road in the general area he was found, thinking someone had just discarded it, but said she didn't see Robert at that time. It's very possible with some of his belongings being scattered that his helmet was not next to him and that's why she didn't see him. Or maybe she didn't see him because he was surrounded by tall weeds. The helmet was in good condition. There was no visible damage to it.
Yeah, I can kind of understand how his belongings are all scattered everywhere, but his helmet not still being on his head is kind of surprising to me.
Well, what are you picturing when you say you can understand the belongings being scattered?
First thing I'm thinking is maybe he got hit by a car and his belongings get scattered that way from the collision with the car. And, you know, obviously he himself falls off the bike as well. But I would have pictured his helmet staying attached to him.
Yeah. Aren't those pretty secure? They wouldn't just... That's a really good point. I hadn't been thinking about that. You wouldn't think it would just fly off.
Right. I mean, it kind of defeats the purpose of a helmet if you get hit.
Yes.
But with that same scenario, you would think that if he got hit by a car and he fell off the bike or got discarded from the bike, if his helmet would have hit the road, then obviously there would be visible damage. Suppose if he fell into the off the shoulder and, you know, into the grass, it probably wouldn't have gotten scratched up, right? I'm confused how his helmet ended up off of his body.
And how his motorcycle is a quarter mile away from his body. I think that's strange too, especially when we consider how Robert died. Robert was found with a zip tie around his neck that was tightened so extremely that you wouldn't have been able to even get a finger under it. And according to Detective Corey Brown, who was interviewed for Unsolved Mysteries, he said, quote, "With it as tight as it went, just physiologically, I think he was probably unconscious within seconds," end quote. And there was another zip tie looped in a circle next to him, but it was just sitting there. And it was confirmed to be the same type of zip tie as the one around his neck.
Okay, well, with that new information, I don't think his helmet flew off when he, you know, if he got hit by a car. It seems like someone took the helmet off and discarded it and put a zip tie around his neck. That had to have been how it happened. Whoever killed him took his helmet off, basically, is what I'm thinking now.
Yes, I agree. Unless the woman who claimed to have picked up the helmet off the side of the road took it off Robert. But I just don't want to believe, I guess, that that is the case. So if we believe her story that she just found on the side of the road, then yes, it seems most likely someone took it off of him.
Yeah, and you said that she came forward and said she found it on the side of the road. So that'd be kind of odd if she did this or was part of a group that did this, and then she came forward and said, yeah, I found this helmet on the side of the road. You know, that instantly would make her part of it.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because the man who went into the market will become a person of interest in this case. And in that theory, he tied himself directly to it. But I'm saying, what if she came upon Robert after the fact and took the helmet?
Okay.
But yeah, again, to your point, why even come forward at all in that scenario?
Right.
So another clue came up when the coroner reported that Robert had multiple broken ribs on the right side of his body, which could be consistent with falling off a motorcycle or a minor motorcycle accident. Of course, Robert could have sustained the broken ribs from an assault or attack, but there was no indication on other parts of his body or on his leathers that there was a struggle or fight, unless that was the singular thing that happened.
Yeah, he could have been unconscious and someone could have broken his ribs, right?
Well, I was thinking if he were flung off of his motorcycle, hit the right side of his body and broke his ribs, couldn't he have been rendered unconscious during that?
Yeah.
And that could explain why they found no evidence of a struggle. Investigators speculated that maybe he wasn't able to fight back because he was already unconscious when the zip tie was put around his neck. And this makes a lot of sense, because to kill someone by using a zip tie, you have to get close to that person and have the upper hand somehow to actually get the zip tie around their neck. Normally, you'd think there would be a struggle in that situation if the person had no other weapon. And if they had another weapon to threaten you with, why would they use the zip tie instead? And tying this back to the broken ribs, it tells us something happened before he died. And it seems likely that it was a motorcycle accident, whether that accident was intentional on someone else's part or not.
Yeah, with how much he rides his motorcycle, I can't imagine that there wasn't another vehicle involved.
Right. And Detective Corey Brown believed Robert's front tire on his motorcycle was low, so that could have made it more challenging for him to maneuver in a situation like that.
So what damage was done to the motorcycle?
There's no mention of damage to Robert's motorcycle, and it could be that they're holding that back for some reason, but I have seen pictures of the motorcycle on its side, and I didn't see any super obvious damage. But you'd think there would be maybe scratches or dents or even paint transfer.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. If there was another car involved and they intentionally or unintentionally bumped him or crashed into him, then there would be, I would imagine there would be some, like you said, some damage or paint transfer, scratches or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, you would think there'd be evidence of an accident, but without law enforcement saying one way or the other, we don't know.
You know, then again, it probably wouldn't take much to render his motorcycle unstable to where he crashed on the side of the road. It could be a really light touch and you know, he could lose control that way.
That's true, especially if we're talking about a much bigger vehicle, like a big truck or something.
Yeah, it wouldn't necessarily have to be a big collision, right?
Yes. Now, there were no obvious suspects from the outset. So investigators dug into Robert's background in an attempt to learn if there's anyone in his life who wanted to hurt him or any suspicious activity he was involved in that could relate to his death. And what they uncovered is what I expected. They didn't find anything of concern in Robert's background. He had no known issues with drugs or alcohol. He didn't have a gambling problem, no connections to gangs. So there was no evidence that he was engaged in any risky behavior. But they did uncover one curious detail about Robert's background. About 7 years before Robert's death, in 2008, his fiance at the time died by suicide using a zip tie around her neck. This is an incredibly unusual way to die, so to have two people with a connection die in this way is shocking. According to a study titled Suicidal Ligature Strangulation Utilizing Cable Ties, a report of three cases, in 2006, there were 33,000 recorded suicides in the U.S., and of the 33,000, there were only three instances where a cable tie, otherwise known as a zip tie, was used in the suicide, making this method of suicide extremely rare and almost unheard of.
Yeah, although it was 7 years prior, you almost have to look at the people associated with Rex's fiance. Maybe they thought he was responsible.
They did look into that because initially Robert was investigated in his ex-fiance's death because he was a significant other, but he was also the last person known to see her. Reportedly, she asked him to stay over after they spent the evening together, but he chose to go home instead. When she was found dead, Robert felt horrible. He was devastated. He thought, what if I had stayed over instead of going home? Would there have been a different outcome? Robert was cleared of any involvement, though, and her death was ultimately ruled a suicide. She had a history of mental health struggles and previous suicide attempts. Robert likely grappled with guilt at the same time of mourning her loss. And her family, I don't know if they thought he was culpable in some way, but allegedly they didn't treat him the same after her death. They didn't really like him anymore. So, like I said, investigators looked into the possibility that there was a connection between the deaths. And one connection they wondered about was if this were a copycat suicide, so to speak. And they found the probability of that to be very low. The coroner found the zip tie was cinched tighter than you would expect someone to be able to cinch it on their own neck. And the position of the zip tie made it unlikely that Robert could have done this himself. And you might be thinking, well, his fiance was able to do this, but without getting overly detailed, the way she did it was more involved and different from Robert's situation and involved multiple zip ties. And in the three instances of suicides noted in that study I mentioned earlier, there was another object used. The police considered the fact that Robert had future plans like the job interview, he had a dental appointment coming up, and a family reunion as well. But beyond that, because I think someone can have future plans and still die by suicide, it's the scene of his death and the broken ribs that stand out. If we were to believe that Robert died by suicide, then we'd have to believe that there was something that caused Robert to break his ribs first. And Robert was in the fetal position, which seems like an unusual way for his body to be positioned if he put the zip tie around his neck. I mean, it's weird if someone else did it too, but especially if Robert did. His belongings were all strewn about, his motorcycle was a quarter mile away from his body, and why do it in that location? It would be quite a sudden suicide, so this didn't really make sense. And Robert's girlfriend allowed law enforcement in their home, and there were no zip ties in the house that matched the zip tie used in his death, nor were there any receipts found for the purchase of zip ties. Doesn't rule out that he purchased some somewhere, but it's good to know he didn't keep zip ties on hand. There were items missing from the scene that investigators felt should have been there, but they weren't. Now, they haven't shared what those items were, but that also points to someone else potentially being responsible here, or at the very least, taking items from him after the fact. And I suspect his wallet was missing because it isn't listed as one of the items found at the scene, and it should have been.
Right, but his driver's license was, which makes this even weirder. Typically, everyone just carries their license in their wallet.
Yeah, so either I'm wrong and the wallet was found and they just didn't mention it, or someone took the license out of his wallet, set it next to his head, and then took the wallet, or they took it out of the wallet and then discarded the wallet somewhere else.
Think about his ex-fiance, people associated with her still held Robert responsible and potentially did this to him. He wasn't on like a main road. They would have had to have been following him and tailing him, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
They would have been pretty involved.
Right. Once this was ruled a homicide and they started investigating it as such, once they ruled out suicide, they started wondering, could this have been a sort of retaliation killing for his fiance's death? Maybe there was someone out there who thought he was responsible. But like you're saying, he was not on a set route. Someone would have had to have followed him for the entire trip. And he was 2.5 hours away or 115 miles from San Jose, where he lived when he was found. It's not like he was just in his neighborhood. And we also know that he never took the same route twice. So it's not like this was a route he always took and someone could have predicted where he would be. And it's unlikely he wouldn't notice if he were followed. It doesn't seem plausible that his death was the result of a retaliation killing or that it was committed by someone he knew at all. And if someone unknown to Robert killed him, that could explain why this case is still unsolved, because cases where the victim and offender don't know each other are notoriously more difficult to solve.
Yeah, I suppose with all that said, the zip tie, it must just be a massive coincidence.
I think so. Yeah, which is so bizarre. I mean, it's a really strange way to kill someone and a strange way to die by suicide. So I couldn't really find stats on how often this is used in homicides, but the investigator who worked this case, he's actually retired now, but the one who was leading the investigation said it was incredibly unusual. And it's just not something you hear of often. According to the Modesto Bee, Robert's girlfriend spoke with the manager at the gas station Robert had stopped at. She recalled seeing him, although she didn't know exactly what time it was. She knew her shift started at 3 p.m., so it was sometime after that. And we know it was around 10 p.m. So this just confirms that she saw Robert, but she didn't notice anything unusual about him, nor did she recall seeing anyone near him. But then again, I don't know how much she was really paying attention. So despite not seeing anyone around him, could someone have spotted Robert at the gas station and targeted him from there? Possibly, but the gas station is about 30 miles or 48 kilometers from where Robert was found. So someone would have to have been tailing him for about 30 minutes. Now, Robert had alcohol in his system when he died, but we don't know where he stopped to have a drink. It sounded like it was a negligible amount. He could have stopped and had dinner with a beer or two, but that poses another possibility. Did he encounter someone at a restaurant or bar? One person who was of interest to the sheriff's office was the man who walked into the market and told the cashier that he saw a man, likely deceased, on the side of LaGrange Road, the guy who didn't have a cell phone. He left the market after that, so the sheriff's office had to put a photo of him from market surveillance footage out to the public to help identify him. They located him from tips they received, and authorities say that after the first interview, they were unable to reach him for a follow-up interview.
So they know where he lives? Or did he come in for an interview?
I think he showed up for the interview and they got connected to him from people who knew him. But I would love to know if they spoke on the phone with him, right? There were some discrepancies in his statements. He said he was alone when he walked into the market, but they have surveillance footage from the market of him getting back into a truck on the passenger side, and then that truck rode off. The Modesto Bee reported that it was a white Chevrolet Silverado 2500 with black rims and a black brush guard on the front with a slight lift to it. What's interesting about this vehicle is that it matched the description of a truck that attempted to run a motorcyclist off the road in Snelling, California, which is only about 12 miles, 19 kilometers, or a 13-minute drive away from LaGrange. And this occurred about 2 months before Robert's death. This tip came in about the incident after the news of Robert's death came out. A man reported that he was riding his motorcycle on Snelling Road, south of LaGrange, when a white lifted truck attempted to run him off the road. The truck was unsuccessful, and the motorcyclist began chasing it, and during the pursuit, the truck headed toward the LaGrange area. He eventually gave up the chase and was unable to get the truck's license plate. So we have this report. And we also have the man who reported finding Robert seen getting into a truck that matched the description from that incident. Could be a coincidence or it could be a connection.
If he was involved, why immediately tie yourself to this? What would be the purpose of that?
I think the only reason would be guilt. If this person was a more of a passive participant in this situation, meaning maybe he was in the truck and someone else was driving and actually pushed Robert off the road, that person could have felt guilty. That's really the only reason I can think of. I mean, how many white trucks are out there attempting to force motorcyclists off the road? Something that stuck out to me is that this individual was the first person to notify anyone that there was a dead man on the side of the road when many motorists had probably passed him at that point, since he notified someone mid-morning. So that tells us that Robert was obscured to some degree, and it raises the question, did he already know where Robert was, or did he just happen to be the first person who saw him among the tall weeds? Do you think it's too far-fetched that he could be connected to Robert's murder?
No, I don't think so, but it still just doesn't make any, you know, guilt or otherwise, it doesn't make any sense to me why he would do that.
Maybe he thought the other person, assuming it's not just him involved, took things too far. And he could have thought that the law enforcement never would have found him because he just walked into this market, said, hey, there's a man on the side of the road, call 911, and he left. He may not have been thinking about the fact that the market had cameras. Had they not had cameras, he probably wouldn't have been identified. Now, Detective Corey Brown told Unsolved Mysteries about the person of interest, quote, I don't believe he was 100% truthful with me that he didn't have a cell phone or that he wanted to identify who he was with at that point in time, end quote. So I can see why they're interested in this man. But to your point, it's hard to understand if he were involved in Robert's death, why he would intentionally link himself to the crime. Detective Corey Brown also suggested that there is a possibility that this man rummaged through Robert's belongings at the scene and took a few items. So he may have seen his items scattered around and went through them, and then he saw Robert, and that could explain why he was the first person to see him, and that could also explain why he was being evasive. But the investigators want to know what happened to Robert. They're not too concerned about a couple of things being potentially stolen from the scene, if that is the case. Or he could simply not like law enforcement and may not feel inclined to cooperate any further because he doesn't know anything. According to the Modesto Bee, there was another man who was run off the road in the area and was robbed of a substantial amount of money he won at a nearby casino a few months before Robert's murder. We have no evidence that Robert went to a casino on the day of his death, But we now have two other incidents of people forced off the road in the area, or one attempt and one success.
Random question, but was Robert part of like a motorcycle club or association with other cyclists?
That was never mentioned. I mean, I know there were other people he liked to ride with, but it never came up that he was in a motorcycle club. I suppose he could have been and it wasn't mentioned, but yeah, I just didn't see that anywhere. No DNA could be collected from the scene, which is disappointing given that the perpetrator had to be in close proximity to Robert to place the zip tie around his neck. And going back to what you were saying about the helmet, now I'm thinking they had to take his helmet off too, so they likely touched his helmet. The absence of any trace evidence is surprising, but I suppose the killer may have worn gloves. Additionally, there were no witnesses to Robert's murder, so that doesn't leave law enforcement much to work with, especially considering it's probable that someone unknown to Robert killed him. Robert didn't have plans to meet up with anyone that we know of. He was in an area he had no connection to. There's no reason to believe anyone he knew was following him. So if a stranger killed Robert, why? One detail I keep going back to, and I haven't gotten your thoughts on this yet, but why was his body a quarter mile north of his motorcycle? Robert was driving south. So let's say a vehicle forced him off the road. He's then ejected from his motorcycle, and that's what caused the broken ribs on the right side of his body. And that accident is bad enough that he's rendered unconscious. Then the person or people who forced him off the road go through all his belongings, and that's why they're all scattered around. They potentially steal his wallet, and before leaving, they put the zip tie around his neck to kill him. They take his helmet off and take his ID out of his wallet so he can be easily identified. So the motive here would be robbery, although there was no credit card activity after his murder, but he may have had cash on him that night. His girlfriend said he would carry hundreds in cash sometimes.
Yeah, if he's traveling at a really high speed and, you know, crashes and he gets separated from the bike, I could see the bike still traveling pretty far, and a quarter mile does seem like a pretty far way for, you know, the bike to go once he's off the motorcycle. But I think it's plausible that where he landed and where the bike landed could have been the result of a crash.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about it that way, just because a quarter mile does feel kind of far. But I mean, if he's going at a really high rate of speed, that could also explain why he may have been rendered unconscious. I think the faster he was going, the more likely, if he were ejected from his motorcycle, that hit is going to knock him unconscious, even if it's for a short period.
Yeah, and he was on back roads that probably weren't heavily monitored by, you know, speed traps. So I would assume he probably would have been booking it, especially since he wanted to get home as well.
Yeah, he wanted to get home that night. It was already going to be pretty late. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he's going pretty fast. Something else to mention is this would have been a very dark area. I don't know that that really matters in this case, but it was just like, there's no lights around. It's just very desolate where he was. Robert's ID was on a red coin purse, which I mentioned in the very beginning, and we kind of moved past it. Robert was not known to carry a coin purse, so no one knew where this came from. It is possible Robert owned it and no one knew, or it was a new purchase, maybe something he bought on this trip to hold loose change. But if the theory I kind of brought up is correct, I have no idea if it is. Why kill Robert if you were already unconscious, other than out of pure evil? And why do it with a zip tie? What a strange way to kill someone. Was that an item of convenience, something they just happened to have in their vehicle? And then why leave a second zip tie at the scene just sitting next to Robert? That seems like something not thought out at all. Maybe they came with, they had two zip ties in their hand and they accidentally left one behind.
Maybe one was going to be for his hands if he was still conscious. you know, if it was already pre-looped, then they could have used that to get his hands bound. But when they discovered that he was already unconscious, then they were like, oh, obviously we don't need this. So they just chucked it on the ground.
But then why do you think they killed him? If robbery is a motive here, why kill him if he's unconscious? Again, like I said, other than just pure evil, I don't understand that. Maybe he wasn't unconscious. The offender or offenders could have feared that Robert could have identified them. I mean, did they plan to steal his motorcycle? Maybe they drove for a quarter mile away from his body and then have a change of heart and toss the motorcycle. Robert's sister has suggested that maybe Robert was chased and that's why he was separated from his motorcycle, or the offender attempted to ride off on it and didn't know how to operate it. That's another possibility. The motorcycle's location is described as being pushed into a ditch, so maybe the offender hoped it wouldn't be recovered, but that's kind of silly. But what do you think about him being chased? The idea being that he's knocked off his motorcycle, he is not unconscious, so he gets up and starts running, and that's why he's separated from it.
Yeah, that's possible too.
But then I ask myself, where do the broken ribs come into play? Because I don't know. Maybe he could have started running with broken ribs just out of pure adrenaline, but...
Yeah, he absolutely could have. I don't see why the broken ribs would have stopped him from running a little bit.
Yeah, a quarter mile. That was one of my first thoughts, is what his sister said, that he was chased and that's why he was separated. But then I keep going back to, how did they overpower him? He wasn't rendered unconscious from the accident. How did someone get the zip tie around his neck? And then I think they had to be able to stabilize him to be able to do that. So maybe two people were involved here. I don't know. There are just a million questions here. Robert's sister has wondered if this was a road rage incident that turned deadly, or if Robert stopped on the side of the road to help someone and something went awry. I don't know what happened here, but I believe this is a case where Robert was in the wrong place at the wrong time. So I would definitely love to hear what you all think in this case. You can get in touch with us a few ways on Instagram. Love to hear your thoughts. So our Instagram is Key to the Case Podcast. Our email is keytothecase@gmail.com. Also on Spotify, there's a way to leave comments. So if you use Spotify, you can do that as well. The news of Robert's murder shocked and devastated his family. Robert's sister, Michelle, thinks that Robert would want her to stop trying to understand the circumstances of his death, probably because it's stressful and all-consuming, I can imagine. So that speaks to who Robert was. But you can't blame her for wanting justice and to understand what occurred, because without knowing who killed Robert, one, you don't have any answers, but two, there's a dangerous person out there who could do it again. Robert sounded like such a sweet, easygoing person, and it was so unnecessary for him to die. And I resent that Robert was killed while doing something he loved. If you have information related to Robert's murder, and in this case, I believe there may be more than one person who does, please contact the Stanislaus County Sheriff's Office at 209-525-7080, or you can leave an anonymous tip by calling Crime Stoppers at 209-521-4636. There is a $12,000 reward for information leading to a conviction in this case. Thank you all for listening today. That is all for this case. We won't be back next week, but we will be back at the end of October. Bye.
Bye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Do you love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.